We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Pelé leaned in and said something to Freddie.
Don't let them change you. Keep working on what makes you different and what makes you special. It was great advice, but it caused me some problems.
But what could change Freddie Adu?
Soccer is going to explode, and it's going to be around this kid.
We were the Beatles. Everywhere we went, it was the Freddie show.
And with that came the expectation, and with that came the pressure.
New episodes of American Prodigy drop Tuesdays from Blue Wire Podcasts.
Taysom Hill continues to roll. David Montgomery puts back-to-back 25-plus point weeks, and the Browns passing game has a day. We're talking all that and more on Roto-Viz Radio.
What's up, Roto-Viz?
Welcome back to RotoViz Radio, brought to you by Indeed and Bet Online. I'm Dave Cabin, Senior Fantasy Analyst at RotoViz, joined by the Editor-in-Chief of Fantasy Labs, part of the Action Network, Matt Friedman. We are recording this on Monday evening, so we will not be talking about the Monday night games, is what I was planning. However, an interesting game that did just conclude. I am not super happy about some of the outcomes in this game, and when we talk about some of the MVP stuff, which we've been talking about frequently, we'll have to get Matt's thoughts on Ben Roethlisberger. But more importantly, Matt, how are you doing, sir?
I am doing okay. You know, just I'm at the desperation and disdain part of the season, where, you know, just trying to get through it. But it's going well enough.
All right. Well, let's just get right into the injuries, not to keep on a somewhat negative note here. DJ Moore has popped up on the COVID list for the Panthers. It's unclear if he is going to be available for the team when they are in action over the weekend coming off of their bye. So an unfortunate circumstance if you're a DJ Moore owner and he's not going to be able to play for you in what will very likely be a playoff matchup. In terms of how this impacts the rest of the team, naturally you're going to see probably a slight pickup for Robbie Anderson, for Curtis Samuel. Are there any other players on the Panthers that you think would benefit in picking up that share if he's unable to play?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit for Christian McCaffrey. I mean, if you have him and he's returning, and it looks like he's going to be returning tentatively, but, you know, if he returns, you were always planning on playing him anyway, but he might get a little more in the target share department just because DJ Moore isn't there. So, you know, all the more reason to be enthusiastic about what he could do if he returns.
Sure. Frank Gore suffered a concussion in his game against the Raiders. not sure what his availability is going to look like next week, but Ty Johnson steps in, puts up 104 rushing yards, and scored a touchdown. Is this a fluke in what was a very weird game between New York and Las Vegas, or do you think that we can see Johnson continue this?
He can probably continue. It's sort of like the, running backs don't matter adage, where any guy who's back there getting enough volume has a decent chance of putting up usable fantasy points. And it's been a weird hallmark of the Adam Gase era, both with the Jets and also with the Dolphins, where he kind of fixates on a guy and then he will just let that guy dominate usage in the backfield. And we were seeing that from Frank Gore, where even though he wasn't that productive, he was getting like 20 touches per game. And then now that Gore's out, we could see that with Ty Johnson. So yeah, I mean, he's at that point a running back too, low end RB2. I mean, that's not sexy, but I mean, at this point in the season, that's good enough to be in a starting lineup.
Yeah, I agree with that. So, I mean, I think that if you have any dollars out there remaining and you're looking at getting Johnson onto your team because you need a running back, that's a perfectly fine decision to make. I don't think that you can expect 20 points per game, like you said, but maybe you can eke out 10, 11, 12, which might be enough to make or break you in the playoffs. Darrell Henderson suffered a knee injury over the weekend. Not very clear if he's going to miss any time, but he did have a long touchdown. Cam Akers, though, also scored, Matt. So I think that if a Henderson doesn't play and you're an Akers owner, you're probably pretty happy about getting him into your lineup. I know we've talked about this backfield now for a couple of weeks. If they're both going, are we still in that that same kind of holding pattern where they're both getting time, Akers is looking better, but you can't really count on him getting a full workload? Or do you think that we're going to see a gap opening now that Akers continues to outplay Henderson?
I think we've already seen that gap just in terms of the usage that Cam Akers had. It's unfortunate that he's not more of a receiving back. I do think he has that potential, but we haven't seen it in the NFL. But he had 21 carries this week. And I mean, the important thing is he got a high number of those carries within the 10-yard line. So he is a guy that they are looking to as a goal line back at this point. 21 carries versus only 3 for Darrell Henderson. I mean, that's lead back. Like, he, as long as this holds, he is now the lead back. And if Darrell Henderson is entering this game injured, even if he's playing, playing through a knee injury, then I think the Rams are all the more incentivized to ride Cam Akers. So, I don't know. I tentatively say we have officially reached Cam Akers season.
Oh boy. All right. Well, let's hope that he closes out with the bang and not at the, not because Henderson is injured, but just because he has usurped this backfield.
No, I'll take it. I'll take it. I don't care. Let's be honest. let's be honest. We want Cam Akers to have as clear of a runway as possible for taking off. And that means it's not like I'm hoping that Henderson is injured or anything like that. But, I would say to put this in like a humanitarian perspective, I think it would be good for Darrell Henderson to rest his knee and to make sure that he's 100% whenever he returns to the football field. And until then, he can let his very capable teammate, Cam Akers, carry him and carry the rest of the team to fantasy championships. That's what I'm hoping.
Put like a man of the most sincere compassion. Brandon Allen suffered a chest injury. If he does not go next week, it would be Ryan Finley. So we might have more turnover at the quarterback position for Cincinnati. Any quick thoughts?
Oh, I can't believe we're talking about Ryan Finley. I don't know if it actually matters all that much to the playmakers in Cincinnati. Like, I don't know if it matters much to T. Higgins or Tyler Boyd. Like, whatever you thought of them with Brandon Allen, that's pretty much what you should think of them with Ryan Finley.
Right. And then actually, is Tyler Boyd going to be out in week 14?
I mean, he was expelled. That's not the right word.
He was ejected.
He was ejected, yes, from expelled. That's so.
He was expelled. What is he in high school? Like,
Yeah. He can't play in this Friday night's game because he was expelled. No, he was ejected. But I mean, I don't think that's turning into a suspension. Okay. I think it's just he was ejected. We have to wait and see. But I haven't heard anything about how he's going to miss another game because of that.
Okay. All right. So I think we have covered all of the injury related pieces, unless there's any glaring omissions that I made.
By the way, this was a pretty injury free week and a pretty un-COVID impacted week.
Right.
Like we got lucky, you know, like week 13, that was pretty good considering where we are in the year, just in terms of, you know, COVID is, you know, spreading again and, you know, everything like that. But we had a clean NFL week, or as clean as it can be. I think we might get that again for week 14.
All right, let's hope. So, as I said at the start of the show, Taysom Hill continues to roll. He's averaged 25 points per game since taking over in week 11. He's only thrown two passing touchdowns. Both came over the weekend, has four rushing touchdowns. With people in the fantasy playoffs now, Matt, things really coming to the wire. How realistic is it that Taysom Hill keeps producing like he has for the rest of 2020? Let me say it like this. Not so much in how that production is coming perspective, but in terms of the fantasy point output.
Okay, so I think we should keep in mind that he's played three games, and two of those have come against the Falcons, and they are one of the worst teams in the league against opposing quarterbacks from a fantasy perspective, so great matchups there. And then the third game, which was in the middle, was against a Broncos team that had no starting quarterback. So he was like at a clear advantage in all three of his games. That said, I still think what we've seen out of him is pretty representative of what he could do going forward. But I mean, there are reports that Drew Brees is going to come back, or at least could come back in week 14, if not week 14, probably week 15. So I'm still not really too interested in Taysom Hill in terms of what he could do going into the playoffs. Like, I don't think you're going to get, you know, like three strong weeks out of him just because he's not going to be the guy on the field. But if news changes with Drew Brees, then I actually do think what we've seen out of Taysom Hill is something that we could project forward. I mean, it's pretty similar, I think, to end of season rookie Josh Allen, where he was actually the number one fantasy quarterback for the final six games of his rookie season. I think we could see something like that because Taysom Hill, he does have that running ability and that gives him a lot of upside, and he does have really good pass catching weapons around him, and he's got one of the best offensive play callers in the league. So given all of that, yeah, I think he's it sounds so dirty to say it, but I think he's a like a top five, top eight fantasy quarterback whenever he's out there room for upside.
Wow. I mean, that is wild. So in my perspective, it is a little bit challenging to try to carry forward some of the touchdown production that is driving up his totals. Having said that, though, because he is in New Orleans, and it isn't unprecedented that we see quarterbacks scoring a lot of touchdowns now, I'm inclined to say that it does continue. I don't think that I'm quite as bullish as you are. I don't see him approximating an average of 25, but he definitely could go over 20. So if Brees doesn't return, I really think that people are going to be keeping Hill in their lineups, and I don't think that they're going to be sorely disappointed if they do, which is just a very crazy place to be in. But I think it's where we are. Jared Cook rebounded over the weekend. We saw Michael Thomas have a fine game. So things are kind of looking up for the players there in the offense. I still think, though, that if you are invested in other players, you're hoping that Drew Brees comes back. That probably goes without saying.
Yeah, I think that's for Taysom Hill, it is a very negative situation, I think, for the other players around him.
Yes. So David Montgomery has been an interesting case this year. Had only had up until week 12 against the Packers one RB1 game, but it was worth noting at the time he has played a pretty grueling schedule. one of the hardest of all running backs. It didn't really open up to week 9 with his best matchup on the season in week 12 against Green Bay, then drew an even better matchup against Detroit, and we saw him string together back-to-back 25-plus point performances. Clearly his two best back-to-back games of the season, 3 total touchdowns in those games on 5 for the season. The schedule sets up nicely. I actually think he closes strongly, Matt. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, and especially given the running back apocalypse that we've had this year, Montgomery, given the workload, is a guy that, I mean, if you have him, obviously you're starting him, but I think you're starting him pretty enthusiastically, in part because, especially now that Tariq Cohen is out, we have a pretty decent sample of knowing what Montgomery can do as a receiver within that offense. And I mean, on the low end, it's 3 targets per game, but more realistically, it's, you know, 4 to 6 targets per game that he's going to be getting. And that gives him a pretty nice floor. And then you tack on top of that all of the rushing workload, where it's Montgomery and then it's Cordarrelle Patterson as this hybrid running back wide receiver as the guy who's behind him. So, I mean, it's basically Montgomery getting not quite all of the work, because they still give Cordarrelle Patterson carries, but I mean, getting as much of the work as almost any other running back in the league.
Yeah, well, he ranks 7th in opportunities among running backs, and you talk about the floor. His lowest point total on the season was 7.2 against Tennessee in week 9, so there definitely is a floor built in there. And for a player that has really felt like he struggled, he ranks 15th in points per game in PPR scoring. So, you know, if you have Montgomery, I think he might pay dividends for you down the stretch.
He's got this matchup against Houston. Houston is one of the worst teams in the league against opposing running backs. So, I mean, week 14, perfect spot for David Montgomery.
Very nice. Baker Mayfield threw for 344 yards and 4 touchdowns over the weekend. We've now seen Jarvis Landry with back-to-back solid games. How do he and Higgins fare with the remaining schedule that the Browns face, which includes the Ravens, the Giants, and the Jets?
I mean, the Ravens, that's a tough matchup. So I'm actually now just finishing up my wide receiver cornerback matchup piece for week 14. And a clear downgrade, I think, is Jarvis Landry, where even though he's getting a really high share of targets without Odell Beckham on the field, he's going to be going against Marlon Humphrey this week in the slot. And like, that is a really tough matchup. And so, I mean, Landry still might get, you know, I don't know, like 8 to 10 targets, but I think they're going to be pretty low quality targets. So he's someone I would probably be looking to fade this week against the Giants. It's interesting because James Bradbury, who's playing very well this year, he doesn't go into the slot. So Landry could still have a pretty good game against him. And then against the Jets in week 16, I mean, it is on. Like, they were playing like 3 backup cornerbacks. I mean, it's a total onslaught.
Fair enough. All right. So this week, maybe not so much as in week 14, weeks 15 and 16, looking a little bit better. Marvin Jones has been racking up air yards, 168 last week, 234 over the weekend, 12 targets in back-to-back games. Of course, Kenny Golladay has been out. If you look at the splits between when Marvin Jones is playing with Kenny Golladay and when he's playing without, you see 8.9 PPR points versus 14.89. The targets jump from 4.5 to 8.29. The yards go from about 37 to 62. It's unclear exactly what's going on in terms of Kenny Golladay returning to action, but nonetheless, I think it's been pretty encouraging for Marvin Jones. The question becomes, Matt, is he a locked-in starter when Kenny Golladay is not in Detroit's lineup?
Yes, I do believe that he is, but for week 14, he has a pretty tough matchup against Jair Alexander, and so I think if you have him, you start him, but you kind of have to adjust your expectations down a little bit. Week 15 against Tennessee could be pretty good, given the state of their secondary, but of course, Adoree Jackson could return, by week 15, which means their secondary would be stronger. And then week 16 has a matchup against Tampa Bay. And I'm imagining he would be going against Carlton Davis. So like three matchups that might not be all that good coming up, but because of his usage, I think you still have to start him.
Got it. Jonathan Taylor, another encouraging game. This is the first time I've really found myself on the show getting pretty excited again. 13 attempts, 91 yards, a receiving touchdown on three receptions, 44 yards. He had 16 opportunities to Nyheim Hines, 9, and Wilkins, 7. I'm starting to think that it's clear the team does believe in him. As a runner, had a couple of good runs. We're starting to see things come around on Taylor in what overall will be a pretty solid rookie season. I just want to share that note because I'm feeling pretty good. Are you, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at a guy who is pacing still for over 1,200 yards from scrimmage as a rookie, and that's pretty good, and who has been better as a receiver than anyone would have anticipated, and who still has, I mean, it's not like this metric is everything, but like 4.1 yards per carry. Like, it's not like he's been trash as a runner. So, I mean, I think you look at all of that in totality, you have to view the season as a success. Like, it might not feel successful as you're going through it, but if someone had told you before the season started, Jonathan Taylor's going to have 1,200 yards and he's going to be a really good receiving back, or he's going at least to be efficient as a receiver, everyone would have been excited.
For sure. Now, another running back that was coming on, a rookie, DeAndre Swift, hasn't played in a couple weeks. He was starting to put things together. In his absence, we've seen Adrian Peterson record 4 rushing touchdowns in the last 2 weeks. Absent of Swift from the Lions lineup, is Adrian Peterson on an RB1, Matt, rest of the season?
I mean, an RB1, I don't want to say so. Like, I don't believe that. But just because he's not getting any usage as a receiver, he's not really all that efficient as a runner. And like, I know efficiency as a runner isn't all that important, but like, if you're not efficient as a runner, you're not going to, like, you don't give yourself a chance to break long touchdowns. That means you're pretty much at the whim of your offense putting you in a position to score touchdowns instead of kind of being able to help yourself out. And you know, that means we're basically looking at 15 to 18 at the most carries that are relatively empty, and you're hoping he scores a touchdown. Like, that's not something that I want. The production has looked good because of the touchdowns, but I don't know. I mean, it's you're hoping, you know, at that point, you're just hoping that things work out. That said, going against the Packers in week 14, it's a situation where, because the Lions are underdogs, they might not really have all that much opportunity to give Adrian Peterson the ball, but the Packers are really bad against opposing running backs. So maybe Peterson actually is able to have a better game than expected.
Yeah, so my opinion on this, and I kind of asked it slightly tongue-in-cheek because he's kind of on that border. I don't really think that you'd expect an RB1 type of outlook from him. The expected points have been decent, though. 15.7 against Houston, 13.8 against the Bears. So he's actually been fairly efficient going over expectations. But like you said, the workload for Peterson, because it's largely to the run, and he's much less involved as a receiver, doesn't have that high ceiling like other players at the position might. So if Swift doesn't play, I think you're getting some reliable production from Peterson, but it's probably going to be capped outside of, and also, I mean, I don't think you're going to be banking on 2 touchdowns from him a game. So
yeah,
that's kind of where we are with Peterson. Yep.
Here's another way of thinking about it. If the Lions had a great offense and you knew that they were going to be lighting it up and putting their goal line back in the position to score touchdowns, then you would be totally fine with a running back who had a pretty inefficient 50-ish yards or so each game, but you knew he's got a pretty decent chance each game of scoring 1 to 2 touchdowns. But like, that's not the case with Adrian Peterson. He's just going to have an inefficient 50 yards and you're hoping for the touchdown. So there's a really big difference there.
You know, I still think one of the things that makes considering Adrian Peterson very difficult is the fact that he is Adrian Peterson. He's just a different Adrian Peterson than the one that is lingering in the back of people's minds.
Are you sure about that? I think at this point he's been old for so long that people have forgotten the young Adrian Peterson from, I mean, I say young Adrian Peterson from 2015. He was even 30 years old then, but like, it feels like he's been old forever.
No, I appreciate that fact. And I don't think people are viewing him as this old Adrian Peterson. But what I mean is, because things have worked out for this guy for so long, it feels like they, on some level, just will continue to work out. Do you know what I mean?
That's fair. Yeah, yeah.
Yep. All right. Kiki QT saw 9 targets, 22.1 fantasy points, 8 recs, 141 yards over the weekend. That was more targets. He also saw more air yards than Brandon Cooks. I know last week we didn't paint the most optimistic picture for him. Do we need to adjust that prior?
Maybe a little bit. I was surprised by the air yardage that he had. And by the way, I think we should also mention, I mean, I can't believe I'm going to mention Chad Hansen, but, like, Hansen was the number 3 receiver. And I mean, it's guaranteed that he's available on waivers in every league. And I mean, I'm not going to put too much stock in what he did in college because he was, you know, like a 4th rounder at, California, but he was actually really productive in college. So just something to think about. Like, I don't think he's a total fluke. Like, he was actually, I think, an underappreciated player entering the league, and with a quarterback like Deshaun Watson throwing to him, he could actually be someone who surprises a little bit. Now back to Kiki, the 9 targets. I mean, that's legit. Like, if he had 9 targets every game, I almost don't care what his air yardage is. Yeah. You know, like, the fact that he's able to convert it is all the better. But if he's getting 9 targets, like, you would probably start Jarvis Landry each week if you knew guaranteed he was going to get 9 targets. Now, that's not to say like QT is guaranteed 9 targets, but it's really encouraging that that's what he got.
For sure. And I do think it's worth noting that, yeah, you can take away something from him because one of his targets, you know, one of his receptions accounted for a lot of his yardage. But like you said, I mean, the 9 targets, you can't really overlook. Moving along off of Houston, the Eagles benched Carson Wentz, who completed just 6 of 15 for 79 yards and no touchdowns, brought in Jalen Hurts, who did a little bit better, managed to record a passing touchdown. Overall, not a fantastic day for any of the wide receivers, except you could maybe make the case Greg Ward, who led the team with 14.7 points, given expectations. Dallas Goedert, Jalen Reagor, 11.5 points. Miles Sanders, only 3.1 points in this game. How bad is this turmoil in Philadelphia for the team's fantasy prospects? And then in terms of how bad Carson Wentz has been, Matt, do you think that the team should turn things over from Wentz to Hurts? Just for a little perspective, Wentz has thrown on target on only 61.4% of passes. That's one of the worst rates in the league. Terrible sack percentage of 9.4, one of the highest in the league. Really, if you're looking for positives on Wentz in advanced metrics, one of the few things you can point to is the average depth of his throws at 8.5 yards. Beyond that, you're struggling to find anything.
I don't think there's really anything good to look at with Carson Wentz. He wasn't all that great as a rookie. He was okay, but, you know, like, not that great. He had a good second season, obviously, but at this point, it feels very fluky. Like, either that was just him playing extremely hot, or maybe that's who he was at the time, but because of the injuries he's had since then, he's just a shell of his former self. Either way, I don't know if it really matters. I think the bottom line is that he's not the guy that everyone was really excited about in 2017. And it feels like he's entering like the bad version of the Ryan Tannehill zone, where you have a guy who's like 29, 30, like he's not there yet, but like next year he's going to be 29. And it feels like the Eagles are still going to be in evaluation mode on this guy. And it's his 6th year. I mean, I think they made a pretty big mistake in paying him, I don't know, what was it, like $100 million or whatever. Fantasy Mansion, aka Podfather, had a pretty good tweet or a couple of tweets on this. Here it is. The Eagles' five-year plan. Okay, we need to trade way up for an old, erratic North Dakota State quarterback prospect, win a Super Bowl with someone else, pay the bad quarterback $128 million, then surround him with J.J. Arcega-Whiteside and Jalen Reagor instead of D.K. Metcalf and Justin Jefferson. Draft a modern NFL quarterback in the second round the year after we commit $100+ million to the bad quarterback, but refuse to play the new quarterback until we are totally humiliated, but somehow still in playoff contention.
Oh boy.
Great stuff there from the Podfather. Yeah. I mean, that feels very accurate. And I would say that at this point, there's nothing redemptive in the Carson Wentz situation. I think either they stick with him, and that means they totally blew a second rounder on Jalen Hurts, or you go to Hurts and you're basically admitting that you blew $128 million on a guy you probably shouldn't have drafted in the first place.
Yeah, so Carson Wentz does not become an unrestricted free agent until 2025. Like you said, with those dollars, they are really invested in him. You know, and the part of the challenge here too, I feel like, if they're trying to move forward, like you said, you used that second on Hurts. Now, Hurts is a player that I liked, but does he feel like somebody who's going to come in and radically change things versus Carson Wentz? Probably not. And being locked into Wentz when there are other passers that they could potentially take going down the line, this just feels like the situation where they're going to keep looking at this sunk cost, and I'm glad I'm not an Eagles fan, Matt.
Yeah. It seems much better to be a Patriots fan right now.
Yes. So New England coming off, and I'm glad that you mentioned the Patriots because I actually didn't have anything in the show notes on them, but there was a question I did want to ask you. So let's take a quick pause here to hear from one of our sponsors, and then we will talk about Damian Harris. . 2020 has already reshaped how we work, and it's almost over. Businesses across the globe are challenged to be their most efficient, which means every hire is critical. Indeed is here to help. Indeed is the number one job site in the world with more total visits than any other job site, according to ComScore. Indeed helps you find quality candidates quickly so you can focus on hiring the person you need to keep your business going. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. And now, Indeed's new way of matching you with candidates instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria, and you can contact them the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only job site that can move as fast as you do. 73% of online job seekers in the U.S. visit Indeed each month, according to ComScore total visits, so it's clear Indeed can help get you the quality hire you need. That's why more than 3 million businesses worldwide use Indeed for hiring. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through December 31. Terms and conditions apply. So, as I mentioned, I wanted to ask about Damian Harris. Now, to just give a little context on Harris, on the season, he's gone over 100 rushing yards 3 times. He has been fairly efficient, actually, maybe even more than fairly, pretty efficient, 5.1 yards per carry, 641 yards on 126 rushes, not really getting used as a receiver, only 5 targets, has caught 4 for 52 yards. It's been feeling like a pretty good season for Matt, for Harris, as a fan watching the games. Of course, just 2 rushing touchdowns, and a lot of that is going to be due to the fact that you have a quarterback that is taking away a lot of opportunity for those rushing touchdowns. So I personally feel somewhat encouraged about Harris as a player, but not a huge fan of the current situation. Of course, we don't know what the Patriots' quarterback situation looks like long term. With that information, what is your perception of Harris now? And as a dynasty asset, where do you think that he should be valued?
I really like Harris. I think
he's a big body SEC Alabama back, right?
Of course. Yeah. So, he could be doing nothing and I would still love him, just like Trent Richardson doing nothing. Love that guy. Okay. So with Harris, I think there are two pretty significant sources of latent potential with him. One, the receiving game. We know from his time at Alabama that he's like at worst an average receiver. And I would say he's probably above average. And it's not as if I'm going to make too much out of a five target sample, but anytime they throw the ball to him, he's done a pretty good job. I think they could give the ball to him a little bit more as a receiver and he could start to take off a little bit. So that's one. If they use him a little bit more as a receiver, he could really develop, I think, into a three down back. The other thing, as you mentioned, is the touchdowns. He's not always going to have only like one touchdown per 50 carries. Like we should expect to see him start to score a little more often. And especially given how efficient he has been as a runner. And you're right. It's totally Cam Newton. It's total bullshit that,
Cam has 11 rushing touchdowns, by the way.
I know it's outrageous that this quarterback who can't throw the ball and who's letting his running back do all the hard work to get the ball at the goal line at that point is just keeping the ball at the goal line and getting all the cheap touchdowns. It is infuriating to see that. But what it means is that we have seen a runner, and I feel pretty confident in saying that he's good enough to be an NFL back. Like what we've seen him do as a runner is pretty representative of who he is. So we know that he's good enough to be a runner. And at this point, once he starts to score more touchdowns, like he's just going to explode, because at that point we will have an efficient runner who's scoring touchdowns and maybe getting more receptions. I feel pretty confident in saying he's not going to get fewer receptions than like the 0.3 receptions per game that he's gotten so far. So I think the future is really bright. And also I should say there's maybe even a third source of latent potential. I mean, they could get rid of Cam Newton. He's on a one-year contract. I think that offense could be better next year with another, maybe more traditional quarterback. So not only would potentially Damian Harris have more opportunity to score touchdowns because his quarterback isn't stealing the goal line carries, but maybe that offense is just better in general. So more opportunities overall, more carries, more goal line opportunities, more targets. I think the future is really bright for Damian Harris, especially because Sony Michel, even though he has returned, he is a clear second fiddle. Maybe not even second fiddle. He's like the third fiddle at this point to Damian Harris. So I really like him, and I would be trying to trade for him wherever I could in Dynasty.
Wow. I have been impressed. I've liked him. I'm maybe not quite as high as you are, but I think the other thing to note is this Patriots team has been one where the conventional wisdom with the backfield every year, and deservedly so, has been you don't know which guys you can play. Well, we're starting to reach a point where it looks like James White is not becoming or not maintaining this significant role in the Patriots offense. He's getting older. You have a player in Rex Burkhead who at this point in his career, no spring chicken. And I feel like Damian Harris is as well positioned as anybody, like you got at, of being the player that really takes over this role in the backfield. And it feels to me like the team is kind of seeing this, given the usage that we've seen go to Michelle. We haven't seen any other player really get significantly brought into the situation recently. So I do think it's encouraging. And though he is in New England, it's possible that this context he finds himself in that backfield is a little bit different than the Patriots backfield that we've been used to over the last 10 years.
Yeah, I think that's fair. He has a minimum of 10 carries in every game but one. And, more reliably, he's in that like 14 to 16 range of carries. Like, that's pretty decent. Obviously, you would like for him to score touchdowns. You would like him to catch passes. But I don't know. Like, for a guy you could get off of waivers really easily, you know, at the beginning of the season, 14 to 16 carries per game is not bad.
Right. Absolutely not. Shifting over here to rookie tight ends quickly, and this is position, as we always talk about, very slow to develop. You're not going to get a lot out of tight ends in their rookie year. Harrison Bryant with 16 receptions on 23 targets and 50.4 PPR points leads rookie tight ends. Do you have any takeaways on him or on other rookie tight ends? Here's an interesting thing. That I'm actually not going to share because I forget who I made these notes on. I think it was Cole Kmet, who's only gone over 30 yards once, has 3 touchdowns on the season, 2 against Cincinnati, or is that, that's Harrison Bryant, actually. Yeah, that's Harrison Bryant. All right, forgive me, listeners, there. So this is what you're getting out of rookie tight ends. Do you have any thoughts, Matt?
It's not great. I mean, Bryant, he is the most productive of the rookie tight ends so far, but in his past 4 games, he's been targeted in only one of them. You know, like, he's not really a focal point in that offense right now. And maybe that changes in future seasons with, you know, David Njoku leaving or being traded, something like that. But I don't know. Harrison Bryant, he's intriguing, but I'm still a little bit skeptical. Kmet is a little more interesting. They have really started to rely on him versus Jimmy Graham. He had 7 targets last week, you know, scored a touchdown, had career high 5 receptions. Kmet is someone I would start to pay attention to a little bit more. And then, you know, you have the 2 tight ends in New England who have done nothing. Who's done absolutely nothing. But, you know, maybe next year they start to develop a little bit. So it's been, as you say, a really bad year for rookie tight ends. And you normally don't really want to invest in rookie tight ends anyway. But it feels like it's been an especially bad season.
For sure. So I think my biggest takeaway there is that you really can't do very much with this season, given what we know about the position. You know, maybe sometimes you can read into things and find a player that you can point to what they've done and say, okay, this is actually indicative of a player that could be special. We haven't seen that yet, but I'm not going to write these players off. The Giants beat the Seahawks by 5 points over the weekend. Does this throw Russell Wilson out of the MVP discussion, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he was even still in the MVP discussion before this game, but now he's really out of it. I mean, I don't know if there's much more to say there.
No, there isn't, but it does segue us into, despite the fact that I said we wouldn't talk about the Monday night games, we do now know that Ben Roethlisberger made a very costly pick at the end of this Monday night game where a lot of people were watching. The Steelers are no longer undefeated, not looking like a fantastic team as far as undefeated teams go. Is this basically the end of Big Ben's case for MVP?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's dead. The thesis, the total investment thesis, was that the Steelers might go undefeated. That was it. That was the totality of it. I think Wilson is out. Roethlisberger is out. It's pretty much a 2-man race between, obviously, Mahomes and then Aaron Rodgers. And so if the Packers can get the number one seed, then I think Rodgers wins MVP. And if not, then I think it's Mahomes.
Yeah, that's going to be a really, really interesting race. Can you imagine how nuts the media outlets will go if we end up with a Green Bay Packers, Kansas City Chiefs Super Bowl?
That would be fantastic. That would be like one of the best things to happen out of this godforsaken year.
Yeah, it really would. I think that's up there as far as best matchups go. Are there any others that you think would be really fun to have?
I don't know. Not really. Like, I'm not too hot on a lot of the teams in the NFC. I think they all kind of have their weaknesses. So, I mean, I'm just sort of whatever, really. I think it would be interesting to see the Rams get back to the Super Bowl after, you know, being pretty close to winning it 2 years ago, doing nothing last year, revamping their defense, and that actually working out. So the idea of like Jalen Ramsey on one side and Aaron Donald on one side going against that Chiefs offense, like, I think that would be an interesting matchup.
Yeah, that really would. I'm just trying to think of the ways that the Rams would line up to match up against all of those weapons for Kansas City. Definitely a chess match that a lot of people would like to see. Moving along now, let's get to some longer-term questions. Now, not all of these are super relevant to in-season at this exact point, Matt, but Trevor Lawrence looking like one of, if not the best quarterback prospect of all time. If you have not been following Travis May or listening to the College to Canton podcast, definitely do that. He's going to get you up to date on all of the incoming prospects. I know he's a huge fan of Trevor Lawrence. So my question for you, Matt, is with the success that we've seen now over the last couple of years of a lot of young passers, kind of a new class of quarterbacks taking over the NFL with Mahomes, Kyler, Lamar, do you think we're going to see something now in dynasty leagues where people start going after these young passers a little more aggressively? And do you think that that starts to get guys like Trevor Lawrence into the first round of drafts as soon as next season?
Yeah, I think so.
Me too.
Yeah, Kyler went higher in the rookie drafts I was in 2 years ago than I expected he would. And I was high on Kyler. Yeah, I do think that because of the hype around Trevor Lawrence, that it's not just like a 1 year thing, but it's, you know, since his 2018 freshman season, there's been a ton of hype around him. And for the most part, he's looked really good. Like, he's lived up to the hype in his college career. And so I do think there's going to be a lot of enthusiasm for him. The thing is, though, that he's not, like, the one area where I would push back is that he's not like the runner that people typically want if they're going to pay up for a quarterback. So, you know, what Kyler had going for him was, I mean, obviously he was a talented passer, but like the rushing production he had in college and the idea that he could translate that to the NFL. Lawrence is a good runner, but he's not like the dual threat that people typically want. I'd say he's a little bit more kind of like Mahomes as a runner, where like he has the ability, but he's not like racking it up each game with his legs. So it's a little bit different, but I do think that Lawrence will go, certainly, I think, in the first round of rookie drafts. I'd say, I mean, without really knowing at this point all that much about the incoming class in terms of like who declares and all that stuff. But I'd say probably like starting around pick 8, I think, is where you would see Lawrence go off the board in one quarterback leagues. Obviously in Superflex, he's the number one pick.
Right. Right. Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's going to be really interesting. And one of the things too, that will drive a lot of that is, even though people know that in many respects, running backs and wide receivers are more valuable, there's still that little voice in their mind telling them about, well, this could be a stable player that you can have in your lineup for 10 years, which I think factors into it. However, though, I'm not sure that makes me inclined to go above a really good running back or a really good wide receiver. And I'm not sure that a lot of people are going to make that leap either. So I imagine that though he's going to go in the first round, it will probably be in the back half. But, you know, like you said, we'll have to see depending on who declares how things shake out. And then also, I think it's going to be interesting to track how many guys come out. And some of that will depend on the uncertainty probably surrounding COVID. That has to play into it somehow, even though we did see a pretty substantial college football season get played this year. This is another unrelated question, Matt, but I saw somebody ask you this, and I thought it might make an interesting quick discussion for us here. What are your thoughts about teams tanking in dynasty leagues?
I don't have a problem with it, but I do want it to look decent. Like, I want it to be like a respectable tank job. I know that might sound weird, but okay. So here's what I mean by that. Like, if you have a quarterback, you have to start your quarterback. You know, like you have to start the guy who is clearly the better play. If it's borderline and you can make a defensible, even if it's not correct, but you can make a defensible claim for starting someone else, then fine, whatever. Like that's fine. I think one thing you can do to make it a sort of respectable tank is at the onesie positions, you don't even roster those positions. So instead of having a kicker, instead of having a defense, you just drop those and you roster another running back, another wide receiver. And the thing is, like, I think you can defend that. You can say long-term, it is worth more to me to have more exposure to a running back and to a wide receiver who might turn into a star than it is to have a kicker. Like that, like long-term, that is probably accurate. And it also just has the nice added benefit of almost ensuring that you lose each matchup because you're not starting a kicker or a defense. So, but I think it needs to be done in a decent way, but I certainly not at all have a problem with people having kind of like the longer term perspective in mind in that, correlating with taking some sort of hit in the production you get in the short term. Now, one thing that you can do to, if you're like a commissioner or just someone in a league and you don't really like the idea of people tanking, you can have like a best ball head-to-head format where I wouldn't say it makes it impossible for people to tank, but it takes out all issues that have to do with start sit decisions. And I think that is a virtue, both in terms of like preventing people from tanking, but then also just like streamlining the friction that you have in a league.
Yeah, exactly. So my take on this is if you don't have any rules that are in place, and I don't like a rule that's just a blanket, like you can't tank. I think if teams want to tank and try to rebuild, that's a fine thing for them to do. But if it does become an issue, some of that might just be reflective of the way that the league is set up, because you could basically just have it in your rules that each week a team needs to play all of their players, right? Or needs to play a player at every position. And then they can have, you know, crappy players go in there. Or also maybe because one of the biggest knocks on tanking is that it's going to skew things in the league as far as teams making the playoffs go. Well, then maybe you do something to balance things out so it's not all head to head. And then you throw in some aspect of, you know, points into the equation. That way the teams that are tanking can go about that. They're not going to score a lot of points. And the teams that are looking to make the playoffs can get in on the merits of the points that they have scored. So I don't really have a problem with teams tanking unless they're doing something that their league doesn't allow for. Just take a vote on it in your league, get the consensus, and go with it. But you know, the thing that always gets me and that bothers me too, is when people will try to make for certain things in fantasy football, they want to make this argument that you're trying to approximate something like a real league. Yet then when things like tanking come up, people will have a problem with it. It's like, well, we all know tanking goes on in the real NFL. So, you know, you can't have your cake and eat it too. Moral of the story is I think that it's up to the league to take a specific action to tweak things in the league. That's either going to make an incentive to not tank, or that's going to allow teams to do it, but, you know, not sacrificing the integrity of the teams that will make the playoffs, which I think is perfectly doable.
Yeah, I think that's right.
All right, my final question for you, Matt, and I posed this poll on Twitter, and it got fairly interesting results. To be very honest, I think this is an impossible question to answer, but we're going to see which way you lean. You can build a dynasty team around one of the following groups of players. Who do you choose? So we have four options here. They're all a quarterback, running back, and wide receiver. Team one, Justin Herbert, Antonio Gibson, Calvin Ridley. Team two, Josh Allen, Jonathan Taylor, DK Metcalf. Team three, Dak Prescott, James Robinson, and Tyreek Hill. Or team four, Kyler Murray, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and CD Lamb. The team that got the most votes was Allen, Taylor, and Metcalf. Team with the least was Prescott, Robinson, and Hill.
Who do you think is the number one dynasty wide receiver right now?
I would say that right now, like in my personal opinion, I think that I do give a slight edge to Tyreek Hill.
Okay. I think I probably have Metcalf ahead of Hill.
Yeah.
Because he's so much younger.
Yep.
And because quarterback is just kind of whatever. And because running back is just like a position that I'm not going to pay too much attention to, I'm going to go with Metcalf.
Fair enough.
You know, like Allen is in the same tier roughly with all these other quarterbacks. The same thing with Taylor and those other running backs. Metcalf, I think, has a slight edge over the other receivers. So I would go with that team.
Got it. You know, so of the RotoViz guys, a lot were going towards the Prescott, Robinson, and Hillside. But the conventional wisdom seems to kind of just be that they didn't really care that much about the quarterback, didn't really care that much about the running back. I think it was Curtis Patrick who said, like, I don't care about the running back because I'm just going to try to trade him anyway.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a really good point. So that's like, what, you know, lined up with a lot of people's thinking, like you said. So really, I think what you're saying is it ultimately came down to just that Metcalf is your top player, not just out of that grouping, but out of all wide receivers.
I think so, because he's so young, you know? I mean, like, I would probably prefer Davante Adams for the next year, maybe the next 2 years, but maybe not even then. Like, it might be pretty close between Metcalf and Adams over the next 2 years. And then after that, clearly the edge goes to Metcalf because he just has that long tail.
So here's a question. I'm going to throw this out, and it might sound preposterous, but I think we should at least explore it. Justin Jefferson, is he in the conversation over some of these guys like Ridley, Metcalf, Hill, and Lamb, or is he not in that grouping yet?
That's a really good question. I think he probably should be.
I think actually. He is.
And the fact that like, if you think about it, you can tell that he should be in that grouping, but that he's not like intuitively in the grouping means that he's probably undervalued in the dynasty market right now.
Yeah, that's a great point. The only challenge would be, and like we've talked about before, do you think that somebody that owns Jefferson hasn't caught up to that fact yet?
Yeah, that's a good point. No, whoever has Jefferson loves him and will probably never want to trade him.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, final thing before we get out of here, Matt. Any really interesting wide receiver cornerback matchups you've identified for the coming week?
Yeah, one thing, going back to the Jefferson thing.
Sure.
So he isn't going to be undervalued if you're trying to trade him if you're trying to get him away from someone who has had him this year, but he probably would be undervalued in dynasty startups.
Got it.
Okay. So yes, some wide receiver cornerback matchups of interest. The big matchup of the week, I think, is once again involving DeAndre Hopkins, this time going against James Bradbury. Bradbury did about as good of a job as any human can against DK Metcalf last week.
Yep.
And Hopkins, although he's, you know, one of the best wide receivers in the league, he really hasn't been that good over the past few weeks when he's gone against shadow cornerbacks. So against Xavien Howard, he had only 30 yards. Against Tre'Davious White, he did have 127 yards and a touchdown, but a good chunk of that came on last second Hail Mary. Against Stephon Gilmore, he had only 55 yards. Against Jalen Ramsey, he had 52 yards and a touchdown, but he needed 13 targets to get it. I think that's going to be a really good matchup, but I think it's another situation where Hopkins is going against a tough cornerback. If you have him, you start him, but I think you have to downgrade your expectations a little bit. And then looking at wide receivers who I think have pretty advantageous matchups, you have Allen Robinson going against the Texans, who have Vernon Hargraves III. Bradley Roby is out suspended, so the Texans are really naked at the quarterback position right now. You have DK Metcalf going against a Jets cornerback unit that is starting three backups. Of course, one of them is Lamar Jackson, the guy who allowed the Henry Ruggs touchdown at the very end of the game last week. And then you have a number of other guys who have fantastic matchups. Tyreek Hill going against Nick Needham in the slot for the Miami Dolphins. And then Davante Adams going against a Detroit Lions team that is without number one cornerback Desmond Trufant and also without their first round pick. So starting backups really at both outside cornerback positions, Davante Adams could really clean up.
Yeah, Davante Adams, he's going to score like 45 points. Random note here, but you mentioned Lamar Jackson. I am not a fan of Lamar Jackson purely for the reason that he always creates this annoying issue in a database that is not created with unique identifiers between him and the Baltimore Ravens, Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, it's like the other Adrian Peterson.
I actually ran into that today because I was looking at some game splits for the Lions, and like Adrian Peterson 1 and Adrian Peterson 2 came up, and when I was looking, I was like, oh God.
And think of someone who has the misfortune of being named Mike Thomas. You know, it's like, come on, man. Like, because there have been like 3, 4, 5 of those guys in the NFL. How many Mike Williamses are there?
Oh my gosh, there's probably so many. Weren't there a couple of Steve Smiths too?
Yeah.
That's going to happen with a name like Steve Smith, I think. All right. Well, anyway, Matt, unless you have anything else to add, we can close things down.
I'm good.
All right. That does it for this episode of RotoViz Radio. You can reach us at rotovizradio@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at DaveCabinFF and at MattFTheOracle. Thanks to Indeed and BetOnline for sponsoring the show. Make sure to rate, review, and subscribe. And as always, remember, it's not a fantasy if you believe it. Football is back in swing. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sports book experts.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.